So Mem Gimel, we're starting Mem Gimel Amar Aleph by Rabbi Meir Omer. The Gemara has, or the Gemara is now discussing the machlokas that we saw in the Mishnah between Rabbi Meir and the Chachamim. There, Rabbi Meir makes a statement, or there's a statement, Kol Mechuber LeKarka, what we know is Kekarka, except Yesh Derim Shehem BeKarka VeEinam Kekarka. There's certain things that are attached to the ground that are not like the ground. And therefore, Rabbi Meir says, Nishbayin Aleihem. Whereas the Chachamim say, "Ein ishbayin maleim." What is this case? What is this unusual case that we're discussing over here? And that's what the Gemara says. Michlal, Rabbi Meir Savar, Kol Mechuber LeKarka, Einu Kekarka. So you want to suggest over here that Rabbi Meir's position basically is that you can take a shvua over here because anything that's attached to the ground is not classified as being a part of the ground, right? That's a pretty dramatic statement. If that is true, Ademiflege Bituunot. If you're going to argue about grapevines that are full of grapes, and that's what we're talking about over here. Let's log this through coat. Even with grapevines, plain grapevines, you could be arguing over here. I mean, that the relevance of the argument has nothing to do with whether it's fruits, the vines themselves. Anything that's mechuber lekarko should be the topic of discussion or machlokas over here. Why does the Mishnah specifically go after gifanim teunot? What is so unique about that? So Amar Rabbi Yossi Rabbi Chanina Hocha Banavim Homdot Libatzer Kamiflegei. So here Rabbi Yossi Rabbi Chanina comes to clarify us what the real machlokas is. And the underlying assumption is that everybody agrees. Kol Mechuber LeKarka Ariu KeKarko. So then, what's their machlokas revolve around? Or what's the focal point of their machlokas? That has to do with Avanim Homdim Libatzer. Grapes that are ripe enough that you could pick them right now. They're ready to be picked. The Rebbe Savar Kibitzrot Damian. We view them as if they are picked. Since they are ready to be picked, they are no longer in need of sustenance from the ground. And since they're no longer in need of sustenance from the ground, they are not considered. They're going to be picked. We know in the end they're going to be taken off the vines. And the best thing for them is to be taken off the vines. Therefore, we view them as if picked. Rabbanan Sabre, lo kibitzurot damian, on the other hand, the Chachamim believe no. As long as they are mechubar, physically attached to the ground, they're classified as karko. So now we've narrowed their machlokas to this unique case, or this specific case, where you have something that is at the end of its life of being mechuber lekarka. So since it's at the point where it doesn't need to be mechuber lekarka, but it still is mechuber lekarka, that's their argument. In that instance, is it classified as mechuber lekarka, or is it not classified as mechuber lekarka? Now the final piece of the Mishnah, which is Einish Bayim Ela Davash B'Mida B'Mishkal U'B'Minyan. So we said at the end of the Mishnah that it has to be that the claim is defined, and that the response to the claim is also defined. Where we learn this from, it's interesting, it's not so clear where we learn this from, right? There, one possibility, the Rivah suggested that we learn it out from the Drusha in Perak Meruba, Salma, that it says in the Psukim, by the Shomrim, Salma, the Meute Davar Shenu Mitsuyam. Over there it says something that is not defined. Although over there we talk about Davar Shenu Mitsuyam is not half a Rimon or half of this. But nevertheless, the Rivah wants to suggest that that is the source, possibly, for the need here by Moda Miksah to have a Dover Misuyam. So Amar Abai, so now we have a Machokas Abai and Rova about to what extent do we need a Mida Mishkal Minyan. So Amar Abai, Lo Shanu Elo De Amar Le Bayit Stam. Our Mishnah gives a case where he just says that Mayomi Abayit Man Full. So if that case Abayit Full, we don't, that is not considered to be a defined claim and it doesn't work. But if he says Amar Le Bayit Zemale, then if he says this house full, then Yediyah Tanate. We know exactly what he's referring to. He's giving us a specific house that he's talking about. He's telling us the house is full to the top. That's a defined claim according to Abaye. So the failure in the Mishnah to have a defined claim or about a specific amount or measured amount is because there he just said Bayit, which is a generic term. Oh, a house full. A house full doesn't give you any information. There are many sizes of houses. There are many types of houses. But if he tells us the specific house is Bayit Zemalei, that already is a defined claim. So Amalei Rabba says, okay, wait a minute. If you're right, Abaye, Ihochi Adatani Seifa, then the Mishnah should have continued when it gives the opposite case. It gives a case where it fails, which is Bayit Malei. That's where it fails. Then it gives a case where it works. In a case where it works, it says Bayit, right? It says Bayit Adaziz, and the other one says Adachalon. So over there it says it works. Rabbi says, the Tani Sefer Zeomer Adaziz Zeomer Achalon. For the defined case, he says, well, one says until the rafters, the other one says until the top of the window. Chayav lift log b'nidah. You should have said in the bayit itself, you could have had a defined or two paths. What's that? B'medvar mamurim b'bayit male. When do I say that it's not considered a defined claim? That's when he says bayit male. He says a full house. Av a bayit zemale chayav. And that would have been the simplest way for the Mishnah to distinguish between these two types of cases? And why does the Mishnah go to a case that's further out, or even more so, which is Ad Aziz and Ad Achalon? Right, the fact that you Abayisid is a bigger chiddush, the Mishnah should have addressed that chiddush and be liflog v'nitna b'didei. Split the argument, or split the difference. You know, create this differential or difference within the Mishnah on this topic. So El Amar Rava. Rava concludes with this: Lolam eno chayav ad chit en enu bedavar shemidah mishkal uminyan v'yodele bedavar shemidah mishkal uminyan. That Rava says no, that it has to be something that is of a quantitative nature. And that unless you give this quantitative nature, bayit zemale is still not a quantity, right? It's not giving a defined quantity. It's not giving a measured point until which we say this is the claim. So therefore, Rava says, even in a case of bayit zemale, it fails. And Gemara says, Tanya kavalti de Rava, we have a brisa that supports Rava's position. Kur tvula li biyadecha. He says, you owe me, you have a kur worth of my tvua. Valomer in lecha biyadi. He says, you have nothing. Patur. Minorah gdola yeshli biyadecha. I have a big, minorah candelabra that I left with you. In the chavidei minorah tana. He says, no, you only have a small candelabra. Patur. Ezorah gdola yeshli biyadecha. I have a big belt that's with you. In the chavidei elazorah tana. No, you only have a small belt or money belt, whatever this piece of the item of clothing is over here. It's patur. So in all of these cases, right, there is a failure because the hoda'ah has nothing to do with the claim. Either he says, Ein lecha biyadi, you have nothing, which is a kofer bakol, or menorah gdola and menorah ktana, and ezorah gdola and ezorah ktana are not modeh b'miktzat, because these are separate items. A big candelabra and a small candelabra are totally different items. They're not one is a portion of the other item. It's two different items. It's like saying, a candelabra and a lamp, right? They have nothing to do with each other, or a fan. These are different items, different. It's the hoda'ah is not miminatana. So you have a failure in all these cases, or there's a kofar bakol case. That's why you're patur in these cases. Aval, amar lo kur tvua yeshli biyadecha. Right, that you owe me a kur. V'halo omer in lecha biyadi al letech. So here he says, no, you only owe me a letech chayav. Because now he took a measurement that is a portion of a kur. Right, a letech, which is a portion of a kur. Now he's agreeing that we're talking about tvua. They're talking about the same item, just talking about the quantitative amount. One says kur, one says letech. That's modem miksat. Minorah bat asara litrin. I gave you, or you owe me, a candelabra, right? That is 10 litrim, weighs 10 liter, or is made out of 10 liter of zahav, kesef, whatever the defined amount is. Yesh lecha biyadcha, that's what you have. En lecha biyadi, ala bat chamesh litrin. On the other hand, he says, no, you only have one that has the weight of 5, or it's made out of, the weight of 5. Chayav. Again, there it's a modem miksat. Gemara says, klolosho davar. That's the klal here. So I want to know, okay, why you bring this as a proof to Rava? I mean, it does sound like Rava. It sounds like he says everything has to be Mida Mishkal Minyan. So what's the Gemara says? Well, klolo shadavar, that last statement in the Braisa, that klolo shadavar, ma, right, latuye mai, what does that come to include? I mean, what additional item does it include? Lav latuye bayit zemale, doesn't it come to include the case of Abaye? Where you say bayit zemale, that's a defined, right, quantitative claim already according to Abaye, and that's what the Mishnah comes to include in this instance. So maybe that's what it's here for to include. So Gemara says, no. Umayishna minorah gdola u'minorah ktana. Well, how is this different than minorah gdola u'minorah ktana? Masha ta'ano, lo hodulo. Masha hodulo, lo ta'ano. Says, listen, what's the problem? What's the problem? The claim and the admission have nothing to do with each other. It's like you're talking apples and oranges. So, talking apples and oranges over here, then also by the case, you can't say Bayit Zemale is the case. So Mara says, Iachi, if that's the case, that it's not the same, Bat Eser, Bat Chamesh Nami, Mashatano lo lo hodulo, Mashoto lo tano. How come the safe of this Bryce, it says, well, if you have a candelabra that's 10 litrin, and a candle that's 5 litrin, we call those a modem miksat. Why don't we say the same thing here? They're just talking about different size candelabra, so we're talking about apples and oranges. There's no modem miksat here. Sha'amar Rabbi Shmuel bar Rabbi Yitzchak hocha benorah shel chuliot askinan. We are dealing with a case of menorah shel chuliot, a menorah that's made out of pieces or parts that can be put together. It can be assembled and disassembled. So when you talk about 10 litar and 5 litar, the size of menorah, it's like a Lego menorah or some sort of mechanics or building structure that you could put together that builds it into a bigger one. So since you could put the parts together to make it into something, a rector set, that you can make it bigger or smaller, that's why it's modu b'miktzat. Right, so therefore, that if that's the case, the kamodu lemine, because then his admission is a portion. He's saying the smaller candelabra is really can be built into the bigger menorah, and therefore it's a portion of the bigger menorah. Where it says, if that's the way you want to say, yochi ezora nami nitne, right? So why don't you do that? Then you should have two cases. The case in the ratio we say it fails. Where's the case where it fails? When you say menorah gdola, menorah ktana, ezorah gdola, ezorah ktana. Then the seifa gives the case where it works. So the sefer, where the case it works, it says, okay, that's a candelabra that's 10 liter versus 5 liter. Then it works. How come the sefer of the Mishnah didn't bring a case of ezorah, a case of the belt where it works? Why? Well, if you want to say to me that we're talking about chuliot here, something that's like an erector set or pieces that can be put together to go from the smaller to the bigger candelabra, the bigger to the smaller candelabra, you could do the same thing with a belt. You could do the same thing with a belt. What's that? So Gemara says, ach yochi ezorah nami litnei, look maybe delifi. Right, so what bidelifi means, a case where you can add on pieces. You're able to stitch on segments to the belt. The belt can be expanded or contracted based on adding on these extra segments that are stitched on. So why don't you say that? Why don't you say the difference in a belt? You have the belt and the ratio just says big belt, small belt. That doesn't work. But on the other hand, if you say a belt with this many pieces on it and another one with less pieces on it, that's something that could be adjusted within the belt, and therefore you are modu b'miktzat. With delifi loktoni, if that's the case, that it didn't use the piecemeal belt, the belt that's made up of component parts, that means that it's not talking about a menorah of component parts either. Eloma Rova Bar Mamel. Rama says, shiny menorah. Menorah is different. Because when you talk about 10 liter and 5 liter, when you talk about those, when you're talking about size, you're not talking about size like big and small. You can't make a big candelabra into a small candelabra, and you can't make a small candelabra into a big candelabra. But when you start to talk about weight, right, weight can be adjusted. Right? If you say I have a menorah of 10 litar, a menorah of 10 litar can be ground down. You could shave it down to the point, right? You could take it to the point where it went from 10 down to 5. That's something that you could adjust, or that's something that you could change. When someone admits to a 5 liter, that is a modem excess of 10 liter, because you can create from a 10 liter candelabra, you can create a 5 liter candelabra. That's not true of cases of gedola and ktana, both by the ezorah, by the belt. If you say big belt, small belt, you can't work from the big belt to the small belt. Well, you tell me, yes, you can. You just cut the belt, and you'll have a smaller belt. You could create a smaller belt. So Rashi points out, you like our belts today. If you cut the belt, you know why? Why? Because the ends aren't tapered anymore. When the ends aren't tapered anymore, that doesn't look like the bigger belt anymore. It's not a belt anymore. You've cut it off. It looks like it's been cut. It's a belt that's cut, not a tapered belt that is that size. So gedola ktana are not portion of each other, and same thing by the candelabra. If you say big candelabra, small candelabra, those are something that you can't move between big and small. Those are different items. Those are different. They're designated as totally different. Apples, oranges, lamps, fans. These are things that don't match up. On the other hand, when you talk about weight, weight is something that can be adjusted. And since you can adjust the weight by filing it down, that's enough to be considered modeh b'miktzat in this case over here. So now we have, again, a machlokas between Abai and Rava. Gemara tried to bring a brisa to support Rava. The Gemara says, maybe not. Maybe the brisa would have included the case of Abai by the klalo shel davar. So then you don't have a proof to Rava. And then the Gemara itself discussed the brisa. What's the case of the brisa? Explain to me the case in the brisa. Why is it that the ratio and the sefer are different? And the Gemara came to the conclusion that this sefer case is unique in the fact that you're adjusting between weights. And since you're judging between weights, that's something that's possible to do or considered modu b'miktzat. Okay, the Mishnah now. Hamavet chaveri ala mashkon. Someone who lands his friend on the mashkon. We saw this instance. We saw this case in Bava Metzia and other places with regards to the shvi'it. About me mishamet the loan on shvi'it. How big a mashkon do you need to cover the loan? Here we have the other way around here, and we saw this in Bava Metzia. What happens when you lose the mashkon? What does that do to the debt outstanding when you lose the mashkon? So here, hamavet chaveri ala mashkon. Someone lent money, but he took collateral for it. Va'avada mashkon, and now the collateral is lost. Amarlo, he says, the creditor says, Esela hiyoviticha alav, says, I lent you a seller's worth, v'shekel ayashaveh, and the mashkon you gave me was worth a shekel, right? There's two shekel in a seller, so it's half. He says half. Basically, you covered half with the mashkon, the remainder you owe me. V'halomer lo, Eliki sela hivitani, you lent me a sela. Alav, right, hivitani, alav, v'sela yashafe, and it was worth a sela. The meshkon's worth a sela, is patur. He's basically the loveh here, the debtor is a kofer bakol. The creditor says, you owe me 50% of the loan, and the debtor is saying, I owe you nothing because the meshkon covered the entirety of the loan. That is a kofer bakol, is no chshuva here. Sela hivitani alav, he says, listen, I lent you a sela. V'shekel hayashafe, and it was worth, right, a shekel. This is what the creditor says. V'halo omer, the debtor responds, lo. Elo, ki sela vitani alav, you lent me a sela, u'shlosha dinarim hayashafe. It was worth 3/4 of the loan. So therefore he's chayav. Now he's a modem miksat. What do we have here? We had a case where he's claiming a sela's worth, which is 4 dinar or 2 shekel. He says, listen, you owed me, I paid you a sela, I lost a mashkon worth a shekel. Half the loan is now gone. So now what's remaining of the loan is 1 shekel. That shekel is 2 dinar. So along comes the loveh and says, you know what, you're right about one of those dinarim, but the other dinar I don't owe you because it was worth 3 dinar or 3/4 of a sela. So now we have a good case of modeh b'miksat, and that's what Gemara says, chayav. In that case it's chayav because chayav to take a shvuah because now he is a modeh b'miksat. Now the case is reversed. Sela yivitani alav, the debtor is now speaking. The debtor says, you lent me a sela, u'shtayim hayashaveh, and the mashkona gave you is worth 2 sela. V'hala omer, and the creditor responds and says, lo, ela, ki sela yivitich alav, I lent you a sela, v'sela hayashaveh, and the collateral was worth the amount of the loan, and we are now out. This is a case of kofer bakol. The debtor is making a claim for a sela, and the creditor is saying, I owe you nothing. That's a kofer bakol, no shvuah. Sela yivitani alav, on the other hand, if the debtor makes a claim like this, you lent me a sela, u'shtayim hayashaveh, and it was worth 2 selas. You owe me, the debtor says you owe me a sela because I overpaid you with the mashkon. Now you owe me the remainder. But halo omer, the creditor responds, lo, eloki sela yiviti chalav, I lent you, you're right, I lent you a sela. V'chamisha dinarim hayashaveh. Now he agrees to chamisha dinar. Now he's basically, what? A mode b'miksat. It's a case of mode b'miksat. The debtor is saying you owe me a sela, and he's coming back and saying, I only own you a dinar. So that's a mode b'miksat case. So therefore, chayav. That's the case of chayav. Mi nishba, who takes the shvua? Misha pikadon etzlo. Whoever's holding the pikadon, the Gemara will discuss what is that going on in the Mishnah. Shema, what are we worried about? Why are we forced the one who's holding the pikadon to take the shvua? Shema yishba zeh, because if we give it to the shvua to the other party who's not holding the pikadon, maybe he'll take a shvua. Ve'yotzi hala ta pikadon. The other guy will show up and say, here's the pikadon. See, I told you he was lying. Right, we can bring it out. Why do we care about that? So Rashi says the problem here is Shemalo dikte gzebishuma. This guy wasn't so careful about the value. V'ipsalenele edut l'shvua, and now he's going to ruin this. The poor debtor now is going to be puzzled edut, puzzled to take a shvua in the future. So we're ruining his life in a sense by having him take a shvua, and the other guy pull out the pikadon. Tosus says, what are you talking about? We institute takanot for rishayim. Here's a guy who's, maybe he made a mistake, but here's willing to take a shvu'ah to the value of this item, and he's wrong. Why are we protecting this individual? What are we doing over here? So therefore, Tosus claims that the reason we don't want him to take the shvu'ah and then have the creditor pull out the pikadon is because then it'll be a shvu'ah, an unnecessary shvu'ah. That's what Tosus says. Ela taima shelo yitzih hala pikadon v'nimtza shvuat loveh levatala. It's worthless. It's meaningless. Why have the loveh take a shvuah when we know that there's a pikadon out there? We would never make him take the shvuah if we had the pikadon in hand. So it's just a shvuah levatala, an unnecessary shvuah. Right? It might even be false, but it's a shvuah levatala in its basic sense because it was unnecessary. So that's what Rashi says. We don't want this to happen because we don't want that guy end up being pasul de edot and pasul the shvuah. Tosus says, no, we don't. We just don't want to have shvuot of hatala. We know, we saw the severity, we saw the trepidation that the Gemara talks about, it taking a shvuah. Why would we want somebody to take a shvuah of hatala? Therefore we say, the one with the pikadon, you take the shvuah, so we're sure that the shvuah is necessary in this case. So that's how we handle it. The Gemara's first question is, ahai, what's this going on? This last line in the Mishnah that says that whoever's holding the pikadon has to be the one who takes the shvuah, what part is it going on? Ilema seifa, if we're talking about the seifa, the seifa is the case where the debtor is making the claim and the creditor is responding. So, but typically, the shvua gabe malve, just say that the creditor takes the shvua. Why are you saying the one who has the pikadon takes the shvua? Just say the creditor takes it. He's the one who's either kofer bakol and is patur, or he's the one who's modem miksat over here and he's chayav. So, Amar Shmuel, it must be a resha. It's It's going on the first half. V'chein amar Rabbi Chiya bar Av, a reisha. It's going on the first half. V'chein amar Rabbi Yochanan a reisha. So Gemara says, my reisha. What do you mean it's going on the reisha? Now, when you're talking about the reisha and the seifa Mishnayot, you have to know the way they're divided up in our Gemara is not always the way they're divided up in the Mishnayot. And also, the reisha and seifa are sometimes used terms that are used loosely. So reisha can be the Mishnah at the beginning of the parak, you know, or something, you know, a Mishnah that's all part of this topic. Or the reisha could literally mean the first part of the Mishnah that we were just discussing. That's what the Gemara says. My reisha, seifa the reisha. Right? We're talking about the end of the reisha. What's the end of the reisha? Sela hivliticha alav. The creditor says, I lent you a sela, v'shekel ayesheveh. And it was worth, the collateral that I lost was worth a shekel. V'hala omer, and the other one says, lo. The debtor, this is the debtor responding, lo. Kiela sela hivitani alav. You lent me a sela, u'shlosha dinarim ayesheveh. And it was worth 3 dinar. So now we have a case of modiv and miktzat ayidei the debtor, chayav. Now who is chayav here? Chayav is the loveh. The loveh is the modiv and miktzat over here. And if he's the modiv miktzat, he's the one who should be taking the shvua. The shvua gabi lovehi. Since the shvua is supposed to be with the loveh, vishaklua rabbonon mi loveh, the rabbonon took it away from the loveh, vishadjua malveh. And they placed it onto the malveh. Why? In order to, that's exactly why. So that the malveh can't take out the pikadon on the loveh. So that's it. So this last statement in the Mishnah that tells us that Misha Pikadon Etzlo takes the Shvua, that's because the Shvua didn't belong there. In the Seifa cases, the claim is being made by the debtor, and the creditor is the respondent. So when the creditor is the respondent, he's Modem Miksat, he's taking the Shvua, that's no problem. The creditor is the one with the Mashkon. There you don't need to tell me about it. Where do you need to tell me about it? In that latter case of the, right, the first part of the Mishnah. That's where the claim is being made by the creditor, and the respondent is the debtor. The debtor's respondent is modem miksat. He should be the one taking the shvua. That's what the chachamim say. No, misha pikadon etzlo. We flip it over onto him in order to protect against having this situation where he pulls the pikadon after the shvua is taken. And so that's because of that. So therefore, we flip it and over to the other party. Now, v'hashto. Now the Gemara comes to a point, which is now that we know the Amar Ravashi, that this position of Ravashi. The position of Ravashi really deals with Shomrim. It's not our sugi over here, but it deals with Shvata Shomrim. By Shvata Shomrim, for instance, you just asked before, Josh, about the Shomer Sachar. Shomer Sachar has two options when it comes to a case of, you know, Gnev, you can claim Gnev and Aveda, and then you'll have to just pay. He pays money for it, and that's it. We're done with the case. Claims, he can claim onus, right? If he claims onus, then he has to take a Shvua and he's Patur. So now what happens if, what we're afraid of, or what happens, if the Shomer Sachar says, you know what, I really like this. This item that he gave me, I really like it. So you know what he does? He comes into court and he says it was stolen. So what is he? He doesn't feel bad about it. Why? Because he's going to pay the guy for it. So he's basically creating a forced sale. He's basically saying, I'm going to keep the item, but I'll pay him for it, so I'm not going to feel bad about it. So what? That's what we're afraid of. But the Shvuot HaTorah don't deal with that. The Shvuot HaTorah don't prevent such a situation. So Rav Vashi says, you know what we do? The Shomer has to take a Shvua she'eno b'shuto, that it's not in his possession. Even in instances where he decides to pay, he has to take a Shvua that the item is not in his possession. So if the Shomer Sachar comes along and says, G'nei b'naveda, here's your money, I'm ready to pay, he must take a Shvua before he pays that it's not b'shuto, because we don't want him having this case where he's really paying for the item and he's going to keep it. Right. I hear you, but you'll see this. We had this by other cases, by Kofar Bakol, that we see that there's a development, dirabonon, of Shvuot, whether it's Shvuat HaEseit, Shvuat here, or She'enu Birshuto, to prevent what they saw as being a problem, that people needed, in terms of, you have a balance, you have to create a balance between a functioning economic society and the restraint of an individual who doesn't want to take a Shvuah. If we're going to say that people are never going to take Shvuot, we're going to end up in situations where we don't like the outcome. The outcome is going to be less than desirable. And so in certain cases, the Chachamim are going to push you into a position where you're going to have to take a Shvuah, even though we prefer you don't take Shvuot. But in these instances, we want you to take Shvuot in order to prevent a greater evil from happening or a greater problem from happening. So now, based on what Rav Ashi says, the Kaimelon Zen Nishba She'enu B'shuto, V'zen Nishba Kama Shaveh, he says, one takes the Shvuah that's not in his possession, the other one takes possession of the Shvuah of how much it's worth. So now we don't have a problem anymore. Why? Because who's taking the Shvuah She'enu B'shuto? Who has the Pikadon? The Pikadon's held by the creditor. So once the creditor takes the Shvuah She'enu B'shuto, right, then we know that the Loveh can take the Shvuah now. The Loveh takes the Shvuah, we're not afraid of him pulling it out on him. He can't pull it out on him anymore. So this is the question we're answering. Mi nishba tchila? Who takes the Shvuah first? Each of them is chayav shvua. The loves chayav shvua. The debtor is chayav shvua because he's modav miktzat. The creditor is chayav shvua to say that he's eno bishuto. So now what do we do? Who takes the shvua first? The answer of the Mishnah is mi peshiyav pikadon etzlo. We want the creditor to take the shvua first. Why? Because if the creditor takes the shvua first, then we know the loveh can take the shvua modav miktzat, and he's not going to get trapped by the malveh. Right? On the other hand, if we let the loveh take it, and then only after that the creditor has to take the shvua she'ena b'shuto, he can pull it out before he takes the shvua she'ena b'shuto. So that's the answer of what the Gemara is addressing now is Shem Ish Bazev, Yotzei Alot Pikadon. They're addressing that issue by having him take the shvua first, she'eno b'shuto. Alright, so that closes up that little piece of the sugya about the Gemara, about what piece that last line of the Mishnah is going on. Now, this is the issue of Mashkon. How do we create a balance between the outstanding debt and the mashkon? So, for instance, over here, Amar Shmuel, Haiman de Osfei Alfa Zuzi Lechavre. Someone lends 1,000 zuz to his friend. Umashken le kata de maglo. He gives him like an axe, the handle of an axe, right, or of a saw, or some sort of a utensil. He gives him like the wooden handle to it to be as the mashkon. So it's clear. Right? It's clear that the value of the mashkon does not equal the value of the loan outstanding. So the value of the mashkon, they're not equal. It's way below alfa zuze. So avad kata de maglo, this is Shmuel's position. If he loses this handle, avad alfa zuze, he loses the loan. He loses the mashkon, he loses the entire loan. Right now, what's the logic behind this? Why would you say this? So Rashi explained to us the sover rekabil. The fact that he's willing to accept this mashkon, what's the point of a mashkon? Right? A mashkon is some sort of the creditor is taking protection that he will get repaid. Now, if he's willing to take an item that is subpar to the value of the loan, that means that he feels that's enough of an incentive to get the money back, or that's enough of a compensation to him that he's okay at this point in time. So if he's sub recovery, go ahead. That means that he now has accepted the mashkon as full payment for the loan. Now, well, now you're going to say to me, okay, now I'm a smart debtor. I'm going to get him to take a mashkon that's worth less. And then I'll say to him, you know what? I'm not going to pay you back. Just keep the mashkon. Because if you say, Savir Rekabil, he accepted the mashkon for this value, that means that even when the mashkon is still extant, it's still around, he can make him take it as payment. So that's where we say Rashi explains to us, no. That what he accepted it as collateral. He did not accept it as piron. He did not accept it as prepayment. So that means as long as the mashkon is still here, he can demand repayment, and he can say, listen, you'll get your mashkon back as soon as you repay me. So the condition for repayment is the mashkon. If he has the mashkon, he can fulfill that condition. On the other hand, if the mashkon is no longer here, he cannot make a demand for repayment anymore. So now that he can't make a demand for repayment, what we have is a mashkon. And there we say, Savir Rekabil, he accepted the full value of the loan. When he lost the mashkon, that's it, he's out of luck. He can't return the mashkon, he can't get paid. If he can't get paid, this was the full value of the loan, this was the mashkon, he's willing to accept at this value, and therefore the loan's over for him. Aval, tarte ka'atate, look, if he got two handles, no. All right, so that means that if he gets two handles of the axe, then we don't say yes, because over there we say what? That he didn't. We don't say that he got one for 500, and he took the other one for 500. So therefore, if he loses one handle, he loses 500 zuz. He loses the other hand, he loses other 500 zuz. No. In order for him to lose the whole loan, now he'll have to lose both handles. If he loses both handles, he'll lose the whole loan out. But if he only loses one handle, then according to Shmuel, what he will do is he'll return the one handle that he has, which will get him his piron. That will trigger the piron. He'll have to repay the money, and he'll deduct from him the value of the other handle. That's what Rish Shmuel says. Along comes Rav Nachman, or Afilu Tarte Katate. Says, no, even with two handles, Avod Chada, Avod Chamesh Mea, Avarida, Chavad Kule, that each one of them is representative of half the loan. Since he took two handles, each one represents half the loan. That means each one is equivalent to the value of 500 zuz. Therefore, if he loses one, he loses 500 zuz. He loses the other, now he's finished off. He doesn't have any loan left. And that's the way Rav Nachman says, Aval Kata Venascho. If he has a handle and metal, right, this is some sort of metal, or whether it's silver, or some sort of metal that he's compensating him with, or giving as a mashkon, over there it doesn't work. If he gives him a handle and naska, it doesn't work. Now, why doesn't it work? Rashi claims it doesn't work because naska is piron. Naska is never as, naska itself is not something that is a value as a collateral. Naska is the equivalent of currency, or as some sort of repayment value. And therefore, when he hands him the metal, it's as if he's handing him something that says, this is the value of the item. You can't change the value and say, this is representative value, because it's clear and defined, the value. Nascho has clear and defined value. So that's why Rashi claims that the difference, or why Rav Nachman's willing to accept it by two handles and say that's 500, that's 500, but by metal and or nasco, there's some sort of coinage, currency, metal, there he says that is value, clear and in value, and he will only accept it at the inherent value of the item. So if that's the case, we don't have a case where you can say that now he's savir v'kabil anymore. That you can't say in a case where it's katav nasco. That's the position of Rashi. On the other hand, Tosafot says no. When Rav Nachman says about katav nasco lo, he doesn't mean that they don't represent the loan anymore, but he says that they don't represent it equally. In the pre, what Rav Nachman said is if you have two handles, each handle represents 500 and 500. He says, whereas if you have two items that are of disparate value, that means you have nascho and you have kata de magla, each one is worth different amounts. You don't say that one mashkon is 500 and the other mashkon is 500. You take the ratio of their values, and that's how much they represented the loan. So say one is worth 6, you know, one is worth 6 and one is worth 4. So together they're worth 10 shekel. So now he has an outstanding loan of 1,000 zuz. That means that the item that's worth 6 will represent 600 of the loan, and the one that's worth 4 will represent 400 of the loan. When Rav Nachman comes and says aval lo, he's not saying that they don't work as mashkon and you don't lose the outstanding loan if you lose it. What he's saying is that you don't just look at them as being equal. You don't look at them as being each one representing half and half, but you look at them and they're you have to value them. And based on that, you proportionately assign the portion of the loan to each item. And therefore, if he loses the item, he'll lose that much of the loan. Tosafot gives an alternative shot where he says that they might have different representation, which is the kata de magla versus the nascha, that if he loses the metal, he might lose the entire loan, because that's the ikar mashkon, that's the thing that has real value here. If he loses that, he'll lose the whole loan, whereas the kata de magla, he'll only lose half the loan if he loses that, and then he will only lose the complete loan when he loses the remainder by the metal. So that's the other alternative in Tosafot. But Tosafot, as opposed to Rashi, is not saying that he does not believe that the loan is lost in this case. Rashi says the loan is not lost in this case because we don't consider the mashkon to be representative value. On the other hand, Tosafot says, no, we still think there's representative value. It's just a question of the proportion of representative value that we're talking about here. That's what Rav Nachman says, that kata nascha don't work. So ava nascha, on the other hand, naradaya amrei afilu kata v'nascha. Even by metal in the handle, ava nascha avad palka. You lose a nascha, you lose a half. Ava kata avad kule, then you lose the remainder. So every day, all the way to the Radai, we say it doesn't matter. No matter what mashkonim are taken over here, each mashkon represents a portion of the loan. That's half the loan. You have two mashkonim, it's three. You have three, it's a third of the loan. Each one is representative of a portion of the loan, and their piece, no matter what their values are, represent that portion of the loan. And now the Gemara says, all right, it's none. Our Mishnah. Selahi v'tichalav. I lent you, right, a selah, right, based on the mashkon. V'shekel ayashaveh. And it was only worth a shekel. Your mashkon is only worth a shekel. V'halo omer lo. Eloki sela v'itani alav. You lent me a sela. V'shlosha dinarim ayashaveh. But it's really worth three quarters of a sela. Chayav, he's chayav a shvua. Wait a minute. Why does he have to take any shvua? You know what he should say to him? Listen, buddy, you lost the mashkon. Bye-bye loan. Why isn't he saying over here? He gave him something. He's holding on to a mashkon. Based on Shmuel's position over here, it's really based on all their positions here. You have an item that he gave a mashkon for, and the mashkon's lost. You know what happens to the loan when the mashkon's lost? There's no more loan. Why do we have a case of modem mixat over here if there's no loan outstanding anymore? So Gemara says, this is a machlokis in the girsa. The girsa that we have in front of us is the girsa of Rashi. Matnitam bidaparish, Shmuel bidaloparish. Our Mishnah is a case where he clearly defines what's going on, and Shmuel is a case where he does not define what's going on. So according to Rashi, or the way that we learn it this way, this girsa that we have here, is the Mishnah, he was explicit that he was not accepting this as the full value of the loan. He says, you give me a mashkon, I know it's subpar value to the loan, and I'm only accepting it as the value of the mashkon, not for the value of the whole loan. The default, which is with the Shmuel, the low parish, the default, if he says nothing, the default is when he accepts the mashkon, it's a very, very kabil. Tosfos is not happy with this because of what the default scenario is. And therefore, he brings the girsa. If you look in the rach here, you can see there's a girsa the opposite way. The Rabbeinu Tam also flipped the girsa, which says, Masnitan bidalo parish. Our Mishnah is the default case. The default case is when you accept a mashkon, you accept it for its inherent value. Shmuel bidaparish. Shmuel's case is a case where you clearly state that you're accepting the mashkon as full value of the loan, that you're willing to accept it as repayment of the loan if it's lost over here. You're mekabel on yourself. That has to be defined, because what? That makes more sense. It makes more sense that the default is that he's only accepting the inherent value. The case where it's more unusual is the case where he accepts it for the full value. That should be the case. We have to be explicit. And therefore, their girsa is the opposite girsa of Rashi. I'm going to read the next breito. I'll read it through, explain it to you, I will tell you that it'll have to be continued tomorrow. Turns out to be a major machloket in the Rishonim between Rashi and the Tosafot. You can see tons of Tosafot here about machlokas in the Girso. I'm not even going to get into the Girso machlokas. I'll read it like Rashi now. I'll explain it according to Rashi. I'm just making you aware of the fact that the Tosafot has the opposite Girso in the Gemara. And even what I just explained to you in Masnisa Parish and Shmod Lo Parish also relates to the upcoming Gemaras. And because of the way the upcoming Gemaras lay out, Tosafot wants the Girso to be different. So now, Lema Ketanai, let's say this is a Machloket Tanaim. Whether when you lose the Mashkon, you lose the whole value. Why? Hamal Bet Chaveru Mashkon, person lends money on a Mashkon. Vavada Mashkon, the Mashkon is lost. Yishba V'yitol Et Ma'utav, Divi Rabbi Eliezer. But it says, you know what? You take a Shavu'ah that it was lost. You repay the remainder of the loan, excluding the value of the Mashkon. Rabbi Omer, Yachol Hu Shiomar Lo, Klom Hilvitani Ela Mashkon. You only lent me the money because I gave you collateral. Avada Mashkon, Avad Motecha. You lost the mashkon, you're out of luck, you're not getting your money back. That's it. Aval, the exceptional case where everybody agrees, amalveh elef zuz b'shtar. Someone who lent 1,000 zuz on with a shtar, with a documented loan. Ve'niach mashkon, then he also gave him mashkon yado, divri akol aval mashkon avad ma'otov. There, if he loses the mashkon, then he loses his money. Because over there, he can't claim that he's taken the mashkon to make sure that he gets repaid. He has a shtar. If he wanted a raya, he can't claim that the mashkon here is rak lezikaril and davrim ba'alma. That he's accepting the mashkon just to remember the value, the loan, that the loan's outstanding. It must be that he accepted the mashkon as the value of the loan. Otherwise, why is he taking a mashkon over here? You want to be zikaron tevarim ba'alma, you have a document that tells us that there's a loan outstanding. You don't need a mashkon to tell you that. So it must be, in this case, savir v'kabil, the loan. So even here, even Rabbi Lezer will agree that avad mashkon avad motav. Hey chidami. What's the case over here? And this is where the girsa problem comes up. I'm following the girsa of Rashi right now, which is either the shavi shiro zuze. Right, if they are equal, if the mashkon is equal to the value of the loan, my time at the Rabbi Eliezer. What's the position of Rabbi Eliezer over here? I mean, Rabbi Eliezer says, Ish bavi tol ma'utav. What type of ma'utav is he taking over here? The mashkon was equal to the value of the loan. That the loan should clearly be dismissed by the loss of the mashkon. Why does Rabbi Eliezer take it? You take a shvua, you get the rest of your money. There's no money left. It must be where the mashkon is not equal to the value of the loan. Ubedishmul kamiflegei. Right? And they're arguing in the position of Shmuel. Rabbi Lezer and Rabbi Kiva's Machlokas is about Shmuel's position, which is, when you have a Mashkon that is lost, do you lose the whole loan? And this is what Rashi explains. If you look at it, the Rashi with Shmuel Kamiflege. Rabbi Lezer laid the Shmuel. Rabbi Lezer doesn't hold the Shmuel. De Mashkon she'enu shaveh kol achov. If you take a Mashkon that's not equal to the full value of the loan, ein adam mekablo lezikaron dvarim. You only use it as a reminder. It's not a value exchange. It's a reminder that the loan's outstanding. Hilkach shomer chinam hu alav. Therefore, he's only a shomer chinam on it, because it's not repayment of the loan. It doesn't do anything for him except a zikaron d'orim balva. V'yishpash lo pasha. He'll take a shwa that he wasn't poshe on the mashkon. V'she'enu b'shuto, and it's no longer in his possession. V'yitol kol ma'utav. And then he gets his money back. V'rabbi Akiva kishmuel. Rabbi Akiva holds like Shmuel svirlei. He accepted as a mashkon. If you accept it as a mashkon, then Savir Kabil, you accepted the full value like Shmuel, and therefore if the mashkon's gone, you lost your loan over here. I'm going to stop here. The Gemara does continue. I want to just get you to finish off the daf in a complete section. Tomorrow we'll have to come back and show why Tosos has to flip the Girsa and puts it the exact opposite, switches around the whole Girsa and the Havamina of the Gemara here, but it really has to do with how the whole flow of the Gemara goes, and therefore we'll come back to that to explain that when we do tomorrow's daf.